Hey, hi, hello, dear listeners. This is DJ Double M, as usually on Tuesday noons. I am going to give you a great show today. Actually, I think it's going to be really, really interesting. I'm going to talk about love, a little bit about the moon eclipse, a little bit about moving out, because this might be relevant to a lot of students, as I imagine it to be. But before we go on to my show, I want to have all the penguins' attentions for a second, because I'm going to make a quick announcement about the blood drive. So Dominican Students Health Center is getting ready for the last campus blood drive for the semester. This is going to take place on April 22nd from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at Dominican University Calarega Hall, Creekside Room. In celebration of Cesar Chavez, the Student Health Center has teamed up with the National Cesar E. Chavez Blood Drive Challenge. If you're healthy and weigh over 110 pounds, your blood can be donated and you might just save a life. So all you have to do is to go to www.bloodheroes.com and search for Dominican University of California to schedule an appointment. If you don't have time to do that, walk-ins are also welcome. Be sure to eat a good meal and drink a lot of fluids prior to going. All students who donate will receive a custom Cesar Chavez Blood Drive Challenge t-shirt and be entered to win a $25 prize of Trader Joe's gift card. So I would be glad if some of you would actually go. I can go because apparently my body weight is not high enough. That is kind of weird, but... Well, still, guys, if you will sign up for this, that would be a really good thing to do. If you believe in good karma, that might serve you also. So let's hop to my show now. And the first segment of today is going to be about love, about marriage, and about relationships. I chose to talk about this particularly for this week because it has been a really interesting week to me. So as you probably know, if you're listening to my show every week, I moved here from Lithuania, which is a really small country with only a population of 3 million people in the Baltics. And I left all my friends, all my family back there. So this week was the time when I got to know that one of my best friends, with who I grew up from the age of 4 years old, that was when I came back to Lithuania from America, got married. Out of nowhere, I just imagine this. You come home, you're having your chill out time, you know, zoned out on the sofa, watching TV, pushing your remote control, and all of a sudden you go on Instagram and what you see is your friend, one of your best friends, wearing a wedding dress. So I was slightly shocked, so to say, and I decided to talk a little bit about that because of this. So the rush about being in a relationship or getting married is sadly more often a response to the society's pressure rather than something that comes natural. So this is a problem because people look for peers to fill in the empty part and to satisfy the feeling of missing someone more often than actually because they truly, deeply like someone. The truth is that we are the ones who give these people significance. They are not significant themselves, we attach it. And if you're a girl, you probably are going to know what I'm talking about or get a clue of it, because we have this habit of trying to attach significance to a person, which is actually a really big mistake to make, in my opinion. Because even if we don't like a guy, but let's say our friends are like, oh my God, this guy is awesome. Like, I like his style. I like his, the way he acts, the way he walks, the way he carries himself. And then all of a sudden you're sitting there and you're thinking, why don't I like him? Maybe I should. And then you try to actually operate this to your head and believe that you actually do like someone who you do not. So people like to call their parents their other halves. Their partners, their other half, sorry. They like to refer to them as their other halves of life, you know, as someone who walks along with them. But the truth is that the possibility of giving a half of themselves to you, or other way around, if you want to give a half of yourself to another person, you have to be full yourself. You have to be mature. You have to know what you want in life, what are your, you know, goals, and not do that because you're seeking for somewhat moral or mental health or, you know, somewhat stability. Stability comes out of you, not out of a partner that you choose, and it's not gonna help. Actually, it might for a while, but just for a little while, and it's gonna, you know, settle down to the regular same old in meantime. So use your freedom and grow. This is the most receptive time of your life. Why would you want to be tied down, especially with something like marriage? You know, it's not like a relationship. It's actually a marriage. It's when you sign a document to live with the person for the rest of your life. So I think I consider this to be a really big step in life, and I don't understand why someone would do that at such a young age. There are so many interesting things to see, so many things to learn, so many places to go, and things like marriage could limit this. In such a young age, it usually holds you back instead of adding to your life. You have your studies, you may have a job, you may want to travel, and a relationship is always a responsibility too. Even if you consider yourself not to be entirely responsible for the other person, and actually you are not, you still will feel guilty if you're not taking care of them. And by taking care of them, I mean not only being nice and buying a flower once in a while, I mean scheduling them into your life routine. Getting to know new people, only bothering your, you know, your usual circle where you live, is might serve to you as a thing that would show that you're not even, you know, that into a person who you think you love. So this is all about the frame of knowledge, all about the frame of understanding. Because if you grew up in the same little town, in the same high school, if all your friends live in the same neighborhood, yeah, your chosen one might be really good or might appear in a really good light in that context. But maybe if you would travel a little bit, study a little bit, understand a little bit about life, you could make a better decision. Not necessarily. If something, you can always stick to that person. I'm not telling you to dump everyone because you always can find better, because that would be stupid. I'm just telling you that such decisions as marriage should be really weighed. They should be, you know, given enough thought. Because marriage is technically just a paper. It doesn't prove anything, and it does not stabilize your feelings. Controversially, it rather serves as a restriction, which at a young age is a tempting thing to break or cross. And I believe that a lot of you would agree with me on that one. So marriage comes with responsibilities of finances. You usually married couples share finances. If you get divorced, you count as divorced, you have to split your everything you have with the other person. Even if, let's say, you earned more, you have to split it into two equal halves. Well, that's what usually happens. If you don't want to do that, if you're not willing to do that, well, because you're going to have to sit in a court for a while. And I'm not kidding, and I have experienced this because I've been through two breakups of my parents and their next marriages. So I know exactly what's it like, and it's terrible, especially if you have kids. For the kids, it's nothing that you would or might want to call stable at all. So if you divorce, you are counting as a divorced person. Every application you fill in, you cannot say that, oh, I'm single. You have to tell them that you are divorced, because that's what you are. That's who you are. And this is going to stick to your forehead for the rest of your life. So I don't know if you want to label yourself as being divorced when you're 25, which might happen because you might grow a little bit and understand that person is not the right person for you. So no one is rushing you to get married, because marriage is a really serious step and it needs to be understood. You need to know that you're going to stay with that person for the rest of your life, because I assume or I presume that if you consider marriage to be a really important step, you should not want to get divorced, or you should not plan to get ever divorced. So do you understand the fact that you, this person who you're marrying, is gonna have to be your life partner, or expected to be your life partner for the rest of your life, which is kind of crazy? How can you know that? And I mean, you will have all the time in your life, all the time in the world, when you're in your 30s, okay, maybe 20s, late 20s, 30s, or maybe even 40s, when you can get married and actually create a stable household and actually stay with that person for a longer while. Because now I think that the rush will disbalance you, and that is just only my opinion. As usually, you know, in my shows I only say what I think, so this is not based on any statistics. This is not what psychiatrists say, or they might, I'm not sure, but I didn't do my research in particular that, but this is just only my opinion, so keep that in mind while you're listening. So we are the most open generation so far. I mean, how many of you guys know parents who stay together only because of you, only because to keep you in a stable environment? Because I know a lot of couples like that. A lot of my friends' parents are like that. They don't love each other. Actually, they wake up every day wishing they wouldn't see each other's face again, ever. But they have to stick around because they believe in marriage. They believe in marriage, and they give themselves to that. And I personally, no, I don't think they would be happier if they would get divorced. But I do think they would be happier if they wouldn't have rushed because of the social standards that occurred 4 years ago, which was that you have to get married when you're 20s, you have to have a child. If you're a girl who's single and you're sitting in a restaurant, people will look at you like you're some kind of weirdo. And I think that is just so amazingly nonsense. So don't confuse a buzz for love. It's a wonderful feeling when your knees start shaking and they bend and you can't breathe. It's harder to breathe when you see someone, that particular someone, that person that you actually care about. But don't let it confuse you. This is just a crush, not love. Real and mature love that would be really hard to and unlikely to find in such a young age isn't desperate or addicted. And love isn't jealous. So if you feel desperate, addicted, or jealous, if you chase your partner every day, if you're, where are you? What are you doing with who are you? When are you coming back? Why are you there? Why are you not here? How are you dressed? And so on and so on. That is not true love, because you don't actually accept that person for who he or she is, and you don't actually trust them. So how can you name it as love? Love is a really strong word. A good relationship is easiest defined by checking if you and your partner are growing together. It shouldn't be a continuous struggle. You shouldn't be the only one who's putting in effort, and your partner shouldn't down you. If, let's say, this is a really tried example, but let's say if your friend or your peer is smoking weed consciously or likes to misuse alcohol or has any at all bad habits, it might affect you if you are going to hang around for a longer while. So if you can sense that your grades are going down, that you can't concentrate as well, that your relationship with your parents or your best friends are going downwards, you need to think about your relationship, because this is not what you're looking for. You're looking for someone who would lift you up, someone who would give sense and meaning to your life, someone who would maybe awaken new talents, new sides of yourself. You're looking for someone like that, not for someone who would depress you and make you chase them all the time. Psychologist research have shown that human satisfaction and happiness over time come back to the level of their usual happiness, which is based and dependent on one's personality and character. So one can be actually happy, truly excited over one event, no longer for 6 months. Then you get back to your general happiness level, and then you need some other irritant. So sure, you can feel happy, and sure, a relationship might bring some stability in your life, but in your 20s, I dare and speculate that you will get bored and even unhappy with it after approximately 4 to 5 years, if not earlier. Lack of excitement in the relationship or lack of irritants in your life can direct you to seek for these in the wrong places. For example, clubbing too much, misusing alcohol too much. And I'm not just saying that. This happens a lot. This happens in my environment. I happen to know a lot of people across the planet, and this is something that I find in every culture that I get to know better. And breakups are always hard. The person who you've been with, like, this is a new thing to me too. I just realized that every person you've ever been with is going to stick somewhere in your memory, somewhere attached to you, to the significant you that you've grown to be in your life. It's not like you can completely forget about them if they meant something to you, if you live with them, if you have the same household, the same, like, everyday struggles. If you put up with a person, be sure to actually rethink and rethink it again, because they will stay as a part of you even after you break up. Having children goes along with marriage. A kid is not a toy. It's a permanent responsibility. Every day and every night you're responsible for the child. Lack of sleep, expenses, trouble in school, and not only teenagers who they grow to be eventually, who want to smoke and drink and have sex, more expenses than college. This is a struggle, and this is not something you want to face when you're still maturing yourself. So something you can't do to when you're financially independent and educated. You can't do that when you're not educated properly. You can't do that when you're financially not independent. For me, it's something I want to do when I actually can be the best mom I can be, and not some fancy looking young LA mom who brings a child into a stressful survival type of an environment rather than a safe place to grow and develop. And kids are not supposed to have kids. If you're taking a step, such a serious step in your life as marriage or having kids, you really need to think again. And you really need to take in consideration your college, your studies, your career plans, your future plans, because you're not going to sit on your parents' heads for the rest of your life. You will have to earn some money, and In-N-Out might be not the career top that you imagined when you were a kid. So I wish to all of you that whatever you decide to do with your lives, just rethink it. Any big decision made, it's not romantic to get married without any thought to it. It's not romantic, it's not good, it's not healthy, it's a stressful event that will be permanent. So it's your responsibility to take care of yourself and think about it really, really in depth before choosing such a thing to do. So I'm going to go to my break now. It's going to take about 5 minutes. And after that, we're going to talk about apartment rentals, how to rent an apartment, and what struggles are faced while trying to do so. So I wish you will stay around and meet you after the break.
Don't call my name.
When I was just a boy,
I said I could do.
When I
So who do you think you're fooling? When I was just a boy. I'm a consecrated boy. When I was
just a boy. Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to DJ Double M. This is my show Do's and Don'ts, as usual, every Tuesday from noon to 1 p.m. This is Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu, so tune in to listen a little bit about apartments and what are the best ways to rent an apartment. So this is something I've usually been up to for maybe 3 months. This is exactly why I'm telling that I'm usually into this. So I got really sick and tired, but now after I've done my hands-on research and after I have all these experiences, I want to share this with you guys. So the first step to do is to know exactly how much you're willing to pay. Remember that in most apartments, expenses for heating and water are not included, so add that to the offered rent price. Don't forget to consider how far is the apartment you're looking forward of getting located from such places like school or college. Also, check out nearest shopping centers and other relevant places which you usually visit more than once or twice a week. Think about gas prices. If you have a car, depending on what car you are driving and how much gas it needs and the current gas price, it might be smarter to get an apartment farther but cheaper, or other way around, closer but more expensive. Compare the prices, including estimated gas expenses and the cost of rent, and then you will know approximately what you will spend in a month, all in all. So for me, for example, it turned out that it's better to get an apartment which is going to be further, a little bit further from my college than the closest opportunities, but it's going to be still cheaper because of my car not using too many gas. So two, arm yourself with patience. First of all, renting an apartment is a major struggle for those who hate emails and text messaging, like me. So set up your email so that the letters will go straight to your phone and set a different tone than your text messages have, because it gets confusing. And for example, me, as I said, I don't like text messaging. So whenever I hear the tone, I don't actually pick up my phone and check who's texting me. I might do so when I'm interested in what time is it currently or something like that, rather than just, you know, right after I get the message. And emails who are relevant for your apartments are more, you know, important than a text message, and you cannot miss them because offers go away just like that, really, really fast. And if you're not on it, you are not going to get an apartment. Spend some time doing your research. Google from now on is your best friend. Try and find organizations that could find the best offer for you online. Personally, I like the webpage www.trulia.com. It's spelled trulia.com. trulia.com. It helps you find houses and apartments for rent or buying, and it's free. You don't have to sign up. LiveLovely.com is another site which I found to be very helpful. You can also contact the owner right away. You just click a button and that's it. You are sending him an email. Make sure to check out what furniture and technological devices do apartments already have. If you're planning to bring a pet into the apartment or a house, make sure it's all right with the owner, because it's usually not. So once you do your research, send a billion emails and left a bunch of voicemails, try to remember and name the places you contacted by their addresses or names. If you cannot remember them all, that means you did a good job with your research. However, I highly recommend to write all the places down and keep it next to you. Carry in your purse if you're a girl, or in your back pocket if you're a guy. It can be hard to track those incoming calls and to know exactly who's calling. And it might be really embarrassing not to know who's calling you, because that actually happened to me. And I was like, oh, which apartment is this again? So it just, you know, knocks down your credibility like that. And since you're a student, they will look at you suspiciously. So this is not something you want to do. And of course, you need to check your email daily. I'm just reminding you guys, because I had to develop this habit. I didn't have that before going to college, but this is a necessity now. So don't let overly excited if you think you found the right place. If you schedule a meeting, first of all, be sure to set a reminder in your phone. A student's schedule is always difficult and lively, so you don't want to forget it or say maybe it can take place at the time when you have class and you forgot that you do have class and you're just like, yes, I will come. Of course I will come. I want to see the place. I want to get it, blah, blah, blah. And then you miss it because you have a class. So don't but get confused led by excitement and set reminders, they are actually really helpful. If you go for a meeting, dress formal and don't stink or cuss, of course. If you're a student, loaning agents will look at you slightly critically. Only the fact that you're going to college doesn't make you a responsible person in their eyes. They will be concerned about how serious you are and also about your financial stability. They will ask you questions like, are your parents going to help you if you need help? Are you working currently? Do you have a job? Have you ever had a job? Have you ever rented an apartment? So be prepared for that. Do cancel an appointment if you're not going to be able to actually attend it. This is simply based on self-respect and, you know, showing that you're an actual grown-up now. If the appointment went well enough, if you liked the meeting, if you saw the apartment and you fell in love with it, don't sign any contracts instantly. Ask for a day or two to think. That is what they're supposed to give you. Then carefully proofread 10 times the thing that they gave you, the sheets of paper that they gave you, the contracts at home, in silent surroundings with no one disturbing you. Be sure to consider every smallest detail, including those really small letters on the down of the page. That is usually the tricky part where they try to trick you. So be sure to check that. If your parent are helping you with the rent, they might need to sign or to co-sign a contract with you, so make sure to scan it to them if you're at college right now or to send it to them. Most people want to reduce rental expenses by living with a roommate or by sharing an apartment with someone. My number one advice is do not look for a roommate or for someone with who you might be living online unless it's a complete necessity, unless you have no other opportunities. Make sure the person with who you are planning to live is responsible. He or she has to be someone who wouldn't miss their payments and preferably tidy. You don't want to live in a house full of crap. You don't want to live with a person who's not tidy enough and you're the only one who's picking up their stuff that's usually left on the ground. Pick someone with who you have spent enough time to know if they are annoying. The little smallest things like chewing habits or habits of leaving their laptop on the table where you eat can grow into major conflicts and arguments over time. You need to discuss the expenses with the person you're going to live with. Are you going to cook at home? If so, maybe it would be nice to make shopping turns and to have a common budget just for monthly groceries. Me and my future roommate have talked about this and decided a shopping schedule and a common budget. We're going to put in a certain amount of money, each of us, and just use that money for a monthly expenses, for the monthly maximum to spend on particularly grocery shopping. Only do so if you think it's necessary. For us, it definitely is because we both have serious issues with overspending. Talk about what items you are going to share and what you would rather keep only for yourself, only for your personal use. For example, I wouldn't like my roommate using my toothbrush, if you know what I mean. And make up a visitor's policy system also. If you're planning, if you have, let's say, a boyfriend or a girlfriend, or if your parents are going to come visit, be sure to talk that through and throughout again with your future roommate. Let them know that your parents might be coming or your friends might be visiting and ask them if it's fine and what days would be the best for them to schedule this. Packing before moving in is more complicated than it may seem. Pre-plan the day of moving. Know exactly every step that you're going to take. It may sound stupid, but believe me, it's going to be really helpful and you're going to remember my words when you do so and you're going to love me for saying you for telling you this. Start packing early. Mark boxes and store stuff to make the moving easier. This will help you remember what is where and to unpack more quickly, to know what boxes to unwrap, because you're going to have a bunch of those. You're going to have a lot of those. Know how are you going to transport everything. I would plan a couple of races there and back rather than, you know, running a special car with a driver for that. Celebrate the new place, but try not to break the windows instantly after moving in on the first day, because pissing off your new neighbors is not a good idea. And if there's a person who is like an RA that we have here, who is taking care of the neighborhood, they might not like you if you're going to be loud on the first day and they might get a wrong impression of you. So you don't want that to happen. This is pretty much all with my segment about renting apartments, and I'm going to see you after a short break. Mystery, Welcome back, dear listeners. This is DJ Double M. You're listening to my show Do's and Don'ts on Penguin Radio, which you can tune into by typing into your search radio.dominican.edu. So this segment, I'm going to talk about GMOs. As we all know, or at least should know, America is still arguing whether genetically modified foods should be labeled or not. I want to make it clear that in this segment, as I usually do in my shows, I will talk based on my own personal opinion, and that's it. Being interested in health and diets eventually led me to doing my research on GMOs and their effects. The outcomes were shocking. So now I'm going to share with you guys a couple of facts that I've learned, and personally, my opinion about this topic is clear now, and I am really strongly against. Later in my show, I'm going to tell you a webpage where you can sign a petition for the American government to eventually actually labelize genetically modified products in our stores. So first of all, let me tell you what is GMO and why they might be considered necessary. So genetic engineering is a process when scientists take genes from one species and force it into the DNA of other species in a laboratory. GMO food is currently legal and have no labels of being genetically modified in U.S. The main cause for such invention was market and money, of course, because this was beneficial for major biotech companies, for agricultural civilizations, and for also the biggest food markets we know and we go to every day. However, there has been no long-term preview recorded studies indicating that GMO food is safe. By survey, 92% of Americans think that GMO foods should be labeled, and nearly 1.4 million Americans have signed petitions requesting that the FDA require this GMO labeling. You can do it by going on www.justlabelit.org, and I really urge you to. I would really hope you will do this, because I did, and I think this is the right thing to do. Which about you're gonna get to know a little bit more soon. So American excuse for not labeling GMOs is that they are perfectly safe according to FDA. GMO foods are illegal to grow or sell in many countries like Austria, Hungary, Greece, and Bulgaria, and all industrialized countries where GMOs are legal except America and Canada require them to be labeled. So in China, Mexico, Italy, and Japan, just to name a few, if a food is genetically modified, there will be labeling indicating this on the package. The biochem industry, big agricultures, and big food manufacturers, as I said, don't want the customers to be properly informed of what they put into the food because it's beneficial for them, because this is how they earn money. They grow bigger fish, they, you know, produce more crops, and they sell more crops. This is everything is industrialized. Apparently, money is more important than our health, and we cannot leave this any longer in the hands of FDI, nor to trust Monsanto, which I'm going to talk about later too. So the whole issue is transparency. If manufacturers can get away with using the cheapest, worst ingredients, then why wouldn't they? Transparency is not in their best interest because they know people would be scared and confused if they knew what was really in their food. The FDI's mission statement says that it is responsible to protect the health of people, but in this case, they are protecting profits of big businesses, ignoring the customer's request and interest, and not protecting health of people. So Americans eat several times more GMOs than any other country in the world. Highest obesity rate is also in America. And yes, there is a correlation between high consumption of GMO products and high obesity rates, because GMO is mostly found in junk food. So every burger you eat, every fries, every pre-packed meal, like let's say pie and stuff like that, is probably genetically modified in the U.S. And this is sadly the only way we can know that, by looking at it and, you know, guessing. Because, oh, it's a junk food, it's bad, it usually has GMOs. And for junk food, it's kind of clear that they are GMO'd. But as for other foods, we never know. So in the U.S., there are 9 crops that are being genetically modified. This is corn, canola, soybeans, cotton, sugar beets, alfalfa, Hawaiian papaya, zucchini, and yellow squash. I would highly recommend to avoid these products. These foods may not seem as a lot to avoid but or to worry about, but one should also recognize that including ingredients that are widely spread it throughout the United States. So any pre-processed, pre-packaged food usually has ingredients derived from corn that are used more in other crops in the entire planet. So ingredients from corns are widely spread, and they are pretty much everywhere. That's the high fructose corn syrup in your dressing, sauces, sodas, ice cream, or even chewing gum. It's also the corn flour used in chip or tortillas, pretty much any chip you eat. And it's the corn oil that many foods are cooked or fried in. So you basically can't avoid it. And yes, if a food is cooked in corn oil, it will be genetically modified. Soy is also a genetically modified crop. This you might have understood to be healthy. However, it's better to avoid soy milk and tofu, mayonnaise, non-dairy coffee, creamers, and margarine are also products that include soybean oil. So whenever you go to a restaurant, just be sure to check twice, you know, because you never know. 90% of store-bought prepackaged foods are GMO'd in the United States. Opponents of labeling food want you to believe it will raise food pricing, while it actually lowers it. And you can check that out typing this anywhere to the internet or to YouTube. For example, simple cornflakes cost more in the United States, they are genetically modified, just to remind you, than anywhere in the world. In Europe, Italy, Lithuania, Hungary, Germany, all of those countries have lower prices. And this is also, of course, including the currency. So I did I gave attention for the currency because it's different. Euro's currency is different than dollars, and this is counted in dollars. So we do spend more than other people in other countries. There has never been a documented report that GMO labeling has led to a cost increase in food anywhere. This is what Professor Chris Vian, GMO Testing Laboratory, University of Free State, South Africa, said. And I'd rather believe him than someone who doesn't even know what they're talking about. They don't want to label foods because they presume that a customer will see a labeled product, like a labeled corn or something like that, and simply not buy it. But the only ethical and moral way to deal with this is to convince us that these products are actually healthy. So give us some research, give us some proof, and then we will buy these products. Because hiding it actually decreases your credibility. And it is not a good way to make us buy food, because whenever we do so, those health freaks like I am, we have the eternal struggle. We read every label on every food we buy. So, and it's really, really hard. Genetically modified foods genetically modify us. The popular saying says, we are what we eat, and I highly agree on that. And also, if our genes change, our baby's genes change. And it's permanent. It's not something you can reduce or somehow, you know, change afterwards to the state where we were back. We were, you know, in the past. So I wouldn't eat genetically modified products. Industrial agriculture model built with the help of GMO doesn't fit nature. It's not natural, and it doesn't belong here. They're genetically modifying salmon right now, and it's kind of crazy because the same fish of 18 months old can be twice the size of a fish that's grown in natural environment. And I, you know what, any research given to me personally, I wouldn't believe that, because how can this be natural if the size of the fish is twice bigger? It can't, and it's not natural, and it is bad. And by the way, this genetically modifying thing is going on only for approximately 30 years, and the gap between 1980s, when the first genetically modified tomato was, you know, invented, until 1994, when the first foods appeared on the store shelves, you know, on our nearest markets. This is only a 14-year gap. This is not allowed to test such a thing like genetically modified organisms. And this is probably why we have no proof, even though I wouldn't believe that there will ever going to be some proof saying that it's perfectly healthy and perfectly fine. Monsanto is not to be trusted either. Monsanto Corporation makes mistakes. They said PCBs were safe. Then they poisoned people in their own town next to the PCBs factory and were fined $7,000 million. And now they're in charge of this. So I don't understand, how can you believe and trust such an organization, because it's highly corruptive. Monsanto should not have to both save the safety of biotech food or interest is in selling as much as possible. Assuring its safety is the FDA's job. And this is what Monsanto's director of corporate communications said. He was quoted in New York Times, October 25th, 1998. So this is, for me, solid and valid proof to be really careful while buying GMOs and to sign the petition. I hope this helps you at some point, or maybe it will help you at some point in your lives when you have kids and want to take care of them, or if you want to stay healthy. So I would really recommend to sign the petition. And you're going to be back with me in a slight 5-minute break when we're going to talk a little bit about the moon eclipse we saw yesterday. See you then.
This is all a dream we dream, one afternoon. don't be surprised when you find me dreaming of you.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to my show, Do's and Don'ts. I'm DJ Double M, and this is the last segment of my show. I'm going to talk about the moon eclipse that occurred last night, and I bet all of you saw it. At least people from my university were all outside staring at the moon, trying to take pictures with their iPhones, which, by the way, sucked. That didn't work. I hope I would have had a Canon. I was like, someone give me a Canon now, because the view was amazing. The moon was red, bloody red, and the slight corner of it was white. So it's really something to see, and I thought that would be a relevant topic to talk about in my last segment of today's radio show. So let me tell you what actually is a lunar eclipse. We all know it's beautiful, but what it is? So a lunar eclipse occurs when the moon passes directly behind the Earth into its shadow. This can occur only when the sun, Earth, and the moon are aligned exactly or very so closely with the Earth in the middle. Hence, a lunar eclipse can only occur the night of a full moon. So unlike a solar eclipse, which can only be viewed from a certain relatively small area of the world, a lunar eclipse may be viewed from anywhere on the, if it's night, for from anywhere on the planet, from any side of the planet. This for me personally has a nice and spiritual meaning, because from when I was a child, I was time by time for a long period separated from the people I knew or loved, and from the people who were my contacts and therefore define who I was. So looking at the moon for me personally at the time served as some sort of a tunnel connecting us, because I knew that those people were staring at it too at the same second, and it somehow made me feel closer to them. So this is just a slight thing of my childhood, a thing I used to do. So as for the spiritual side, which is actually believed in some cultures like Hindu, about the astrological phenomenon, some people believe an eclipse to be a bad time when negativeness rules the earth. This is kind of scary. They grant this belief on the fact that the time when it is supposed to be, or there is supposed to be light, it is dark, and therefore dark forces are believed to take place in earth in really big measurements. I mean, the politicians shouldn't make really big decisions according to them, because it's going to go wrong. It's not going to go the way it was expected to go. Any contracts, any good big contract signed with other countries, as for, you know, the country's leaders, is a bad idea to do so when there is a lunar eclipse. It is for this reason people may experience tiredness, headaches, sickness at a physical level. At the psychological level, there are excess emotional and negative thoughts, especially about spiritual practice. The moon is known to affect the mind. During a full moon, the effect is even more pronounced. So we all know this, but you know, if it's an eclipse, apparently it's even more harmful, more damaging, and you should look out for that. So this is further associated with a lunar eclipse. All of this, you know, talking about how the moon affects us, how the moon raises the ocean, that is biologically proved. That is actually proved. But according to these people who believe in the moon really, really strongly, they think that a combination of an eclipse is deadly in any way possible. So there is a general decline in decision-making capacity, and people are more likely to make incorrect decisions, incorrect choices, as the intellect is also affected. So if you're about to study, I guess that's a good excuse not to study. I guess if there's a full moon and if it's the eclipse, you can get away without studying and tell your teacher the next day that, hey, there was a moon eclipse. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't, you know, think properly because my intelligence was affected. And you could link them the Wikipedia link that I'm reading from right now. So the maximum subtle impact of an eclipse of humans depends on where is it most visible. The more visible it is, the greater the impact on people in that region is also. So in America, in San Rafael last night, it was kind of visible. It was kind of really good visible. A lot of people took professional photographs. They were preparing for that night. I talked with a bunch of friends who were planning to, you know, moon gaze in this case on a top of a hill in the middle of nowhere, somewhere not too far from the area we live in. But still, people knew about this and people were going to watch the moon. So probably the impact was huge. However, I haven't heard of any in particular bad events, and I hope you haven't either. So during an eclipse period, the power of the stressing energies increases by 1,000 times as compared to other times. So this is some crazy believing right there, and I wish it wouldn't be true, because actually this is okay. I personally don't actually believe in that kind of stuff, but it did affect me when I read it. I was sitting in my room, and as you know, those who lived in Fanjo at Dominican University at Fanjo Hall, those of you know that it's always cracking. It's a really old building, so it's cracking all the time. So imagine me, I'm sitting there at 2 a.m. trying to proofread my radio script, and I hear this crack on my wall, like the second when I'm reading about this lunar eclipse thing. I'm like, oh my god, now it's going to be haunted too. So yeah, it was kind of spooky. It was a spooky night, and it actually made me not to call a couple of my friends who I was planning to call to, because I was angry about some stuff, and I was about to, talk it out or scream it out or whatever. But I'm glad I didn't, because I woke up in the morning and it was calm as I could be, actually. So yeah, this thing about the moon, it might affect us. Who knows? I mean, we never know. So, and I have two do's and don'ts for how to act when the moon eclipse is occurring. So do spiritual practice. It might save your soul. No, I'm just kidding. It will reduce lunar eclipse effect on you up to only 20%. So while usually you would get affected by 100% by this nature astrological phenomenon, you now, if you do spiritual practice, you only will be affected by 20%. So if you're religious, that's the time to pursue religion. And don't plan important steps in life. Actions made at this time do not result how expected. I hope this doesn't apply to my research paper, which I wrote last night. So this is all the information I had for today's show. I hope you enjoyed it. I personally think it was fun. I always have fun while talking on the radio. And just to remind you once again about the blood drive that Dominican is preparing themselves to give, it's going to be on 22nd day of April from 10:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at Dominican University, Cal Rega Hall, which is the cafeteria, Creekside Room. So this is arranged in celebration of Cesar Chavez. The Student Health Center has teamed up with the National Cesar E. Chavez Blood Drive Challenge. And if you're healthy and weigh over 110 pounds, which I sadly don't, your blood can save a life. So all you have to do is to go again on www.bloodheroes.com and search for Dominican University of California and then schedule an appointment. However, if you don't have enough time to do that, walk-ins are also welcome. The only thing you really, really have to do before deciding to give blood is to eat a good meal to raise your sugar level and drink a lot of fluids prior going. All students who donate will receive a custom Cesar Chavez Blood Drive Challenge t-shirt and be entered to win a $24 Trader Joe's gift card. So this sounds like a good investment, and this also sounds like a really good and honest action to make. I personally would urge you to do so. So thank you for listening to me today. Meet you next Tuesday, same time, same place, Dominican Radio at radio.dominican.edu. And tune in on noon of Tuesday. Glad you were with me. See you.